This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. So, Oscar weekend is here at last, the final stop in Hollywood's long awards season. This year, in the middle of our economic hell, turns out there's no business like show business. Movie ticket sales are actually very strong. For me, one of 2008's best movies was great old-fashioned fantasy escapism that also dealt smartly with civilization in decline. WALL-E.
Wow.
I was hoping for WALL-E to be the first animated movie nominated for the Best Picture Oscar. Alas, I didn't get my wish, but it is up for 6 awards this weekend. In case you somehow missed it, the premise of the movie is it's the year 2700 and humans have ditched Earth. But they forgot to switch off one last robot. And little WALL-E is left sorting through mountains of human trash.
This is WALL-E, a typical day at work, and he's a trash compactor. One of the sounds you hear is the sound of a car being crushed, recorded at a demolition yard.
Wow.
WALL-E's voice starts with my voice.
That is Ben Burtt. He's up for 2 Oscars for the sound design of WALL-E. And he's a sound legend in Hollywood. He has created some of the most famous movie sounds ever. Like in Star Wars. You can hear it in the robots, the hairy mammal, and the alien bad guy.
I know when I finished Revenge of the Sith after 29 years and 10 months of Star Wars, one of the things I was relieved about was no more alien voices or robots, because they're hard to do. But a short time after finishing, I was invited over to Pixar, where I listened to a pitch by Andrew Stanton, the writer-director of WALL-E. I hesitated just a little, but then I realized, oh, this is such a charming, fun movie. How can I say no?
As soon as WALL-E comes on the screen, one thinks, oh, it's some relative in some fashion of R2-D2.
Well, there are very few prominent robots in movie history.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've got Robbie the Robot, which I loved as a kid, and most robots spoke with a conventional human voice.
That is correct, sir. I am monitored to respond to the name Robbie.
But with Star Wars, there were so many opportunities there to develop and go down some new pathways. The successful voices have been those that always had in them a disguised human voice, what I call a soul. The trick has always been to blend the two, to have an electronic or machine-like character. Here we hear Mo. He's a little cleaning scrubber robot, and his prominent feature is a little cleaning brush, which is my electric shaver from home. His little voice is a sped-up version of me doing sounds I might have made in third-grade class and gotten punished for it. But now I can get paid for it. There's the sound of a little cyclone whistle. You blow on it, and that's the sound of his little trackball motor as he zooms back and forth.
I may be wrong, but I don't think there is any sound that is as recognizable and iconic that isn't a piece of music as the lightsaber sound. Tell me how that process went.
The lightsaber was the very first sound I made for Star Wars, oddly enough.
Really?
And I had in mind something almost immediately, and I was a projectionist at the time at the USC Cinema Department, and I went back, and there was a motor in the projectors there that made a wonderful hum. It was a sort of musical hum, and I thought, well, that sounds like a lightsaber to me. So I recorded that sound. It didn't sound quite dangerous enough to me, and I was doing some other recording in my apartment. I had a broken microphone cable, which when I carried the mic past the television set, it picked up hum from the TV picture tube, just as the kind of thing you normally would not want in your recording.
Uh-huh.
You'd reject it. But I said, oh, that hum sounds dangerous. And the two together became the basic lightsaber sound. To get the motion in there, I played the sound over some speakers and then re-recorded it with another microphone by waving the microphone in the air around to get the Doppler effect of the motion of the swords. And that's basically how it was born.
You see? You can do it.
I call it luck.
In my experience, there's no such thing as luck.
Now, a few weeks later, I was hiking with my family, and we were hiking under a guy wire at the top of a ridge in the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania, and the pack frame caught on one of the wires and plucked it. And I said, wow, that sounds like a laser gun. I struck it with pieces of metal and a wrench and a wedding ring and various things. And out of that came the basic sound for all the blasters in Star Wars.
Get in there!
These days, do things like that, actual electromechanical noises, play as much a role in this digital age as they did 30-odd years ago?
And despite the digital age, I still emphasize field recording and real physical objects. I think that the audience, even if they can't identify a sound, they associate with those sounds some kind of reality. And so we hear lots of things only through the medium of motion pictures, things like thunder or a face punch. And they may not sound at all like those things in real life.
If you wouldn't mind, we thought it might be fun to play some sounds and given your incredible expertise, see if you can say what those are.
Okay, I'll take on that challenge.
All
the
right.
Sound effects challenge.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Name that sound.
Well, I believe that's the creature in the trash masher, is it not?
From Star Wars.
It certainly sounds like, yes, it is.
Trash compactor water beast?
A lot of that is just me in an echo chamber.
Really?
You know? Yeah, just weird. You know, if you play things backwards, you can kind of create weird downbeats to sounds.
Uh-huh.
You're going to test my memory here.
One for one.
I can't remember all these things. Uh-oh. What's next? All right, well, this is the Snowwalkers from Empire Strikes Back, recordings that were made at a metal shearing company, and it was a place that has big stampers that beat pieces of metal into various components, and that was used for the walker's footsteps, although the squeaky part of it was actually the dumpster lid of a dumpster in front of my house.
Really?
I went out to throw some trash in it one day, and that became the sort of squeaky kneecap of the Snowwalkers.
Good work. Here's another sound.
Oh, my gosh.
Ben Burtt, this is your life.
No, my gosh. No, that's... I don't think I had any connection with it.
Shall I tell you?
That one. Yeah.
Howard the Duck.
Oh, no. I had some connection with it. Well, see, that's been erased from my memory bank. Yeah, that's Leah Thompson.
But you did it.
Let's hear it again. I've got to remember what it is now. Now that you clued me in.
What happened?
How the hell did you do that?
My powers are growing.
Yeah, right.
It's, sorry. It's actually when Dr. Jennings shoots lasers out of his eyes at the diner.
Yeah. Okay. No, I remember doing the tongue sound for that movie, and that was dragging an empty garden hose across the front patio. You got a kind of a kind of sound.
Well, here's a final sound.
Okay. Now, gee, is that from The Incredibles?
I'm not sure. Older.
No. It's not something I would have done. That wasn't well handled, that one. There's one part in there. I wouldn't have done it that way. I could hear the speed variation on whatever tone was going, whatever motor. Did I do it?
You did. Death Race 2000. Death Race 2000.
Oh, no! Well, that's... Oh, gee. Well, okay.
1975, sound of drivers swerving to hit pedestrians.
Frankenstein scores!
Frankenstein it's unfair. That's going into someone's private basement attic. Death Race 2000. Well, I don't think my name was on the picture, so maybe I can't officially remember it. But
there
I made, that was the first film I ever made sound effects for. And I learned a lot on Death Race. It was a fun experience.
Well, you did so well on the other ones. I'm happy that we could play some of your own work that you didn't recognize. Is there a movie that you didn't do the sound design on that you regard as that's the one, that's the great one?
Of course, I love the things I grew up with, Forbidden Planet and War of the Worlds, and later 2001, and the fact that it's a film with almost no sound, and that's what gives it such power. It's very minimalistic. My favorite sound effect is, well, the arrow from The Adventures of Robin Hood, 1938. Something that just struck me as a kid, and I loved that sound because I couldn't go outside and fire my own little toy bow and arrow, and it wouldn't sound anything like the one in the movie.
Yes, yes.
He split Philip's arrow.
Is there, beyond that, just a sound in the world that, my God, I love that sound?
As a child, I remember playing with my grandfather's shortwave ham radio set in the blisteringly hot attic of his Ohio home. And I loved tuning between stations and listening to all the tones and beeps and whistles and static. And often I will do that now today. I will just turn on a shortwave radio, put it next to the bed, and mistune it somehow, so I'm really not hearing any station directly. There's something about that that I find it opens my mind, as I find it a peace and an excitement at the same time. So I guess that's probably something that universally for me I'm always going back to.
Ben Burt, thank you very much for coming in today.
You're welcome.
Pixar's WALL-E is up for 6 Oscars this weekend, including 2 for Ben Burtt's sound. Coming up, we head to a very tough public school in Paris.
I didn't make the film to say this is what school should be. I just wanted to show how complex it is to be a teacher.
That's next in Studio 360 from PRI, Public Radio International, and WNYC. Stay with us.